Hey guys, welcome to WDWNT Nerd Alert. I'm your host, Joe Hogarty, and joining me tonight is Jack McCarthy.
Afternoon, folks.
And Fedra Eckers.
Hello, everybody.
And we have special guest Daniel McComb.
Hi, everyone.
And Jason Geo.
Hello.
So tonight, it is, well, this afternoon for us, it is the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 Roundtable. We've all seen the movie, and the way we're going to do this, like all of our roundtables, we'll each take 5 minutes to discuss how we felt about the movie, no spoilers, and then we'll rank it out of, we'll rate it out of 10, and then we'll get into spoilers, and then we'll rank it amongst the Guardian movies and also within the MCU. So you guys ready?
When you are.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Good. We will go with, I am going to choose Jack.
Oh, that's because he's more curious with me. I've been ducking him since I saw
yep.
it.
Yep.
I've true. Been saving it for the round table. I have to say, I enjoyed it. They packed a lot into this movie. And some of it is good. Some of it probably could have been changed a little. But overall, I really liked it. I liked the character growth because there was some very significant growth between a few of the characters that you thought you had a handle on, you thought you knew them, but things came out of left field a bit. So it was good. I enjoyed it also because it wasn't as jokey as what we've seen during the rest of Phase 4. I don't know, is this considered Phase 5 yet? Or is this still the cap of... Okay.
Well, Ant-Man was Phase 5.
Okay. So they kind of went back to more of, here's a story. We're still going to have some humor in it, but we still have some pretty heavy stuff they're dealing with. So I liked it in that regard. So it got kind of back to like what we saw maybe in Phase 1 and 2. They definitely put a lot of thought into story first. I didn't notice, or maybe they've worn me down, I didn't notice all of the Awoken Nutty agenda and hat tips too.
No, there wasn't any.
I didn't notice it. And honestly, I like that a lot. They got back to what? Concentrating on stories and characters. And that's what they need to get back to because they've kind of lost their way in the MCU. They've almost gotten as bad as Star Wars. But overall, I liked it. Go see it if you're a Guardians of the Galaxy fan.
Well, what's your rating of it?
My rating of it? I would give this about a 7.5.
Okay. Fedra.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I took your advice by going low expectation, just like go open, go in. I would say it would be really snobby of me to think that this trilogy, like the third part, would be just as good as the other two. So I'll just leave it at that and go into that later. I rate it exactly like Jack, 7.5. I feel like it was a really high 7. Like I'm even leaning toward 8 just because I agree that the balance of great music, really heavy storylining, the character development for sure. There's different narratives in here that I could go into later. But I mean, overall, I really liked it. I would definitely see this again.
All right. Dan.
I was a bit mixed coming out of the film, and I think there's some really high highs, but then I think there's some quite, I don't know, maybe not low lows, but some elements to the film that, like Jack said, could have been changed and I think would have really bumped the score up a lot higher. I'm somewhere between a 7.5, and I think that some missed opportunities in the film let it down a little bit. I thought it could have been a bit tighter overall. But I did enjoy it. I came out of it enjoying it, but the more I've thought about it, I've made notes leading up to today. I've made more notes about things that I had issues with more than I've made notes about things that I really enjoyed.
That's good.
So, yeah, 7 to 7.5.
All right. Well, I'm glad you took notes so we can go over them. Jason.
I loved it. I thought it was excellent. I really only had one or two complaints about it. But other than that, I thought the character development was great. The growth was great. I thought the way they ended it was fantastic. I got to give it an 8.
An 8?
I got to give it an 8.
Okay. So, yeah, I saw it opening day. And usually my thing is I got to see it twice before I can really give a good opinion on it. So the first time I saw it, I was a little underwhelmed. I didn't see it a second time, by the way. It sounded like I saw it a second time, but I do need to see it a second time because I have a feeling I'd probably like it a little bit more. So my rating changed slightly because I did think about the movie. Originally, I was pushing towards a 6, but it's probably a 7. And I wrote the review and I gave it a 7. I feel like it's the worst of the three, but it doesn't ruin the franchise, which is good. I think that it's still a very good franchise. Like Jack said, there's no wokeness in this, which is pretty cool. It's just like they're on an adventure. It's very dark. I don't understand why they had to go as dark as they did, especially it's PG-13, but I still think that some kids are going to have problems with some of the stuff that are in this movie. And it's too long. I would have cut out at least a half an hour of this, which we can kind of discuss, you know, which stuff I would cut out. And I kind of felt like it was missing fun, and I felt like they made strong characters a little weaker. And when I say weaker, it's especially Drax. I didn't like what they did to him, and I didn't like what they did to Nebula. They soften them up, and I just didn't think that was necessary myself.
They softened her up.
Yeah, they did. Well, towards the end.
Towards the end. I mean, because I thought she was more abrasive and obnoxious for most of the movie, but I'm sorry. I don't want to interrupt you.
No, it's okay. But, yes, I give it a 7 out of 10. All right, let's get into spoilers and some other things that we can talk about. Well, the first thing I want to talk about is James Gunn. You know, what did you guys think about him? He's going to be like the head of the DCU going forward. He's directing Superman Legacy. So do you have high hopes for his future with DC? And you guys can just throw it out there, you know.
Okay. I do have higher hopes for the DCU now that he's running it. I think he's a better storyteller than Zack Snyder. He just puts a little bit more heart into his stories. The Snyderverse had some great moments, but as far as the meat connecting those moments, I don't think that's Snyder's strong suit. And James Gunn, I think, is a more adept at telling a story that kind of keeps everything flowing a little bit better. And also, he makes the characters a little bit more human, relatable, empathetic. That's just his style. I'm curious to see what happens because we know Warner Brothers, they're direction with DC Comics in general is, well, maybe it's just not for me. I hope that doesn't spill back into the movie division. So I kind of like James Gunn, and I think he's going to do all right. I'm going to miss him in the Marvel stable of characters because I think he does pretty well on introducing us to characters and making us like the characters. And they could use that over at Warner Brothers.
I don't really have a big opinion about either one. I just know that DC is suffering quite a bit. So I think any change is good just so that we can, you know, get better films, because the last few ones have been really suffering really bad, especially in the box office.
Yeah. How about you guys, Jason, Dan?
I'm with Fedra. I don't really have an opinion. It makes me more excited for DC, but until I see another DC film he's directed other than Suicide Squad, I don't have an opinion on it.
Mm.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he does with a bigger name and like a big name in Superman, because having Guardians initially is like playing with house money, wasn't it? Like, nobody knew who they were, nobody had any expectations, and he knocked it out of the park. But then the Suicide Squad movie that he did was better than the first one, but I didn't think it was a good movie. So I think DC will benefit from him. I think he does tell a good story overall, but it'll be interesting to see now how he does with the pressure of all of DC and a character like Superman, and if he can deliver on that.
It does seem like he's very focused on Superman, and I think he'll do a good job with it. I think he shows respect towards the character. He understands the character. He's been reading a lot of the comics, and I think he's read them before, but he's kind of chosen his favorite comics that he wants to show in the future Superman movie. So I'm optimistic about that. I still kind of feel in a way that, I don't know, I think he wasn't given his best effort in this movie. And I feel like it could have been, and I don't know the time frame, that he might have been negotiating with DC at the time, and he knew he was on his way out, and he just didn't care. Or in another way, too, it's like, this may have been his FU to Disney for them firing him, and he just didn't give his best effort, you know, with this last movie. Because, like, they basically, it sounded like they begged him to come back to do the third one after they publicly humiliated him, which, you know, again, I understand why they did do it. But it's like, when you, I felt in a way, once they fired him, they should have never got him to come back. I felt like that was a cowardice move. I wouldn't have fired him in the first place. It's just, it was questionable. They were firing a lot of people back then, like Roseanne Barr. I think Gina Carino might have came afterwards. But, you know, once you fire someone at Disney, you don't sneak and ask them to come back. It just kind of like shows that they're weak. And I wouldn't be surprised if you're like, yeah, I'll take your $20 million, you know, and just didn't really focus too much on a great story, right? For me anyway. All right. So for me, I guess the big thing, I think a lot of people were expecting a lot of the Guardians to die. And there are a lot of rumors that two, three of them are going to die, and no one died. Were you guys surprised at that no one died really in the movie?
I wasn't expecting it.
This brings up one of the things that bothered me in the movie is all the death fake outs reminded me of Rise of Skywalker. Like, I thought Drax was dead, like, very early on when he got shot, and he fell to the ground. And then it looks like Rocket's going to die at some point, that he's going to heaven or wherever you want to call it. And then Quill looked like he was about to die.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought they were going to take out Quill. I figured Rocket was going to survive because it was his story. But I thought this was the last one they were going to cap it with, you know, Star-Lord dying and then them picking up the pieces afterwards. But not that I'm as bloodthirsty as you are, Joe, but I was okay with no one dying.
I would have, out of the three, I would have liked to seen Rocket die, because that would have been a really cool fake out, because everyone was expecting that they're on this journey to save Rocket's life, and then he dies. You know, I think that would have been, for me, really good storytelling, because everyone's expecting him to survive. It's like, there's no way he can die, especially once he's like in this heaven state. It would have been interesting if he just says, no, I want to come with you. And they're like, all right, you can come with us, instead of going back. I thought that was kind of weak. Anyway.
I think there was a missed opportunity with Quill, the Quill scene. So not like it did look like he was going to die, but I think the missed opportunity was Gamora should have saved him.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
And that would have mirrored the first movie, because that's what Quill did. He saved Gamora. He gave her the helmet mask, didn't he, to save her. And I think that would have been a nice scene, even if they didn't end up together or whatever that was. And we can talk about that later if it comes up. But I think that was a missed opportunity. That would have been a nice moment as far as capping a trilogy.
No, you're right.
That would have been a better way to do it.
Because, and I'm sure we're going to talk about Adam Warlock at some point, but he wasn't needed in this entire film.
Yeah, we'll get to him next. I just wanted to say one thing with that too. I think that the issue too is that James Gunn has already said that everyone from Guardians is welcome over into the DC universe, and they all kind of said that they're going over, except Chris Pratt. And I think that that's why they left it open. I have a feeling that, you know, Chris Pratt is going to be staying, because, again, he survived, and at the end credits, you did see that Star-Lord will return. He might have his own little movie or franchise. I think he wants to go over, but I'm not sure if James Gunn will have him over, because there's a lot of people on the internet that don't like him and want to see him canceled. And James Gunn, I don't know, he might be influenced by that, I feel.
Or not want to take the risk as he's starting. Yeah.
All right, let's get to Adam Warlock, like you had mentioned. All right, since you mentioned him, Dan, what's your problem with Adam Warlock?
Right. When he came into the... I don't know anything about Adam Warlock, so Jack can be the source on how accurate it was. But I really liked that opening scene with him coming in. I thought they established him as powerful, as a threat. He absolutely kicked their ass. And then the whole... He's actually a child version because he came out of the cocoon early. But if you look at him in the story, if Gamora did save Peter Quill at the end, Adam Warlock did not add anything to the film. He was just in there because it wrapped up the end credit scene from Guardians 2, and it almost felt like he had to be included, the Sovereign had to be included, because they left that thread open. And instead of just, forget it, let's just ignore it, we'll just shoehorn it in somehow into the story, when actually it didn't add anything to the story, and that was something that added 10-15 minutes that we probably didn't need. And now I get now why he's also been made the child version, because he needs to be a comical character, because if he's going to be in this next version of the Guardians, they don't really need a serious death machine. They want somebody that's comic relief, if it's because they're going to try and play it out how they've done with the rest of the team. So,
well, before Jack goes, I was gonna say I felt they ruined the character. I knew him mostly through Infinity War or the Infinity Gauntlet. You know, both of those, like, he was a main character in there, and he just was intelligent, he was wise, he was confident. And in this movie, he was a man child, a mama's boy, and he was very naive, not too bright. And in the beginning, like you said, Dan, that scene was pretty cool. I liked that. I liked that they established how powerful he was and all that. But then it just turned the corner. Like, once he was with his quote-unquote mother, it was like, what are they doing to this character? And it would have been better off if he wasn't in the movie. I kind of feel like James Gunn didn't like the character. and he was shoehorned into putting him in there because Marvel wanted to push the character maybe to make his own movie or something like that. And he did a Venom on Us where he did it reluctantly, but he made the character not so good, so that it's kind of like dead on arrival. Like, he's not going to have a solo movie. If there's a Guardians 4, he might be in it, but it's not the Adam Warlock that we knew in the comics, which was disappointing.
I agree with that. I definitely felt like he didn't write him in the movie, and then Kevin Feige was like, hey, you teased him in the second one, don't forget Adam Warlock, and he just kind of like placed him somewhere. I felt this would have been better if the High Evolutionary like paid the Ravengers to try to steal Rocket, and they sent Gamora to do it. They catch her doing it after she hurt them. They keep her as a prisoner while they try to get the key. That could have helped cause some stuff between Quill and Gamora. Gamora ends up, saves Quill at the end, and then still goes back with the Ravengers like it didn't.
Yeah.
I thought that would have been a better kind of way for the story.
Yeah, I could see that. Jack? I'm sorry, Fedor, you want to go?
You go, Fedor.
We can get into it later if you guys saw this as much as I did, but I think there was this back and forth of masculating and then demasculating the characters. Mm-hmm. I already have four examples in the film of four different masculine characters. So I will say that that's what I felt happened to Adam. It's like, oh, you could be really, really powerful, but then back off. Okay, and then you could be funny, but then back off. And it's just like, I don't like that, because then it feels like you're tainting it and it's not the genuine character. It's like, just because, you know, to me, he almost reminded me of, and you guys can correct me if it's too much of a comparison, but he remind me of Captain Marvel, where it's like, you've got the strength, you've got the flight, you've got this power, like, but that doesn't mean that you're the all-powerful. Like, there's other superheroes just as powerful as you. And it was like, we don't want to make him outshine rest of the Guardians team. So we have to find a way to kind of demasculate him by putting him as this man-child and then uncertain of his ability toward the rest of the film. And I definitely felt what Dan was saying. Like, toward the end, it was like, he has to be sitting there on that rock. It's like, doesn't really have to be, you know, like, I all of a sudden, like, me and Julian are both looking at each other like, okay, so I guess he's part of the Guardians now, because like, he's wearing the suit, and it's just like, what? But that's not what you want to do to the audience, like, that kind of, well, you know, maneuver.
But the thing too with him in the comics, he never really wanted to be part of a team. He was just on his own, you know. He was helping all of the Marvel characters during the Infinity Gauntlet and Infinity War. But I think he's completely comfortable being his own self. Like, he wasn't longing to be accepted by a group of people. He knew the power and responsibility that he had. And it's just kind of dumb to make him part of the Guardians. But I want to hear from...
Yeah, doesn't he have to protect that his entire civilization?
Like, yeah,
I don't know, Jack. Is that part of his responsibility? Okay. All right, I'll stop, because that's my question.
You go, Jack.
Well, we've talked about different characters that are hard to write and to really establish a status quo. And Adam Warlock is one of those. Way back in the day, in the 60s of the Fantastic Four, they introduced him.
Really? It was that far back?
That far back.
I did not know that.
It was like in the issues, like in the mid-60s. And he was introduced that he was genetically engineered by this scientific think tank, which, of course, whenever you put one of those together in the comic books, they know better than everybody else, and they're going to do what they want to do until it all goes horrifically wrong. So, of course, they create the cocoon, and, like, Adam Warlock doesn't, like, hatch until, like, the last page. And then he's like, you know, you guys are up to no good, and somehow they get disintegrated, transported into the ether, whatever. but he's left by himself. Now, they created him to be the perfect human being. So now he's out there. He doesn't know anything about the world. However, he's still very intelligent, but he has no direction. The next time we see him, he shows up in Thor. And he goes toe-to-toe with Thor because he's at the point where I don't want to be alone anymore. You know, warlock need woman, you know, not like that. But he sets his eyes on Sif. And Thor, of course, doesn't appreciate it. And he goes toe-to-toe with Thor. So in doing that, they've established him as this guy is super strong. Then he somehow ends up on Counter-Earth with the High Evolutionary. And that's really when most people were introduced him, because I think he had kind of like a short run in one of those like Marvel Superheroes or Marvel Premiere or one of those type of comics. So he's hanging out with the High Evolutionary, who that's when he gets the Soul Stone, which of course now he just has something on his forehead. It's not the Soul Stone because those are all gone. So they did establish him that he's able to fly. He's super strong. He could take a punch. And he is awkward with the way he interacts with other people. However, if they were going to make him true to the comics, he would have been more like Doctor Strange when Doctor Strange is in his Sorcerer Supreme mode. Mm-hmm. He's not joking around. He's like, you know, telling Iron Man, I would sacrifice you in a minute if it would save, you know, the planet. You know, he's much more matter-factish without Stephen Strange's jokiness like he is with Wong. However, they couldn't do that with him in this movie, because Adam Strange is a movie, Adam Warlock is a movie all by himself. If they were going to start dealing with who he is and him turning against the High Evolutionary, that's a movie in and of itself, because what happens in the comics on Counter-Earth is the High Evolutionary kind of gets the idea, looking at Adam Warlock, like, maybe I could create my own Animal Man version of Adam Warlock for Counter-Earth, because they're all animal people. Let me make the perfect animal person. And of course, he creates it out of an apex predator, and it is able to go against the programming, and you get this character called the Man Beast, who's Adam Warlock's equal in a lot of ways, except he looks kind of like a werewolf. So like I said, that whole story could have been in and of itself a movie. So that's where we saw Adam Warlock. Next thing you know, he shows up where Jim Starlin gets him, and he's really is Doctor Strange from the MCU without the humor again. He's brilliant because now he's had time to interact with the universe at large. So he has just absorbed everything at like a sponge, and he's sort of knows better than everybody else. He's not afraid to let people know that. He's not afraid to tell, you know, Doctor Strange, shut up and listen to me. You know, he goes and he's talking to different elders of the universe, and he's like, no, you're wrong. So he's that kind of character. However, they start in Marvel, they start concentrating more on that he's always the smartest, wisest guy in the room. And they've gone away from the fact that he's super strong, can fly and do all this stuff. They almost kind of play it off like when he flies, it's a spell because he's a warlock. And he eventually shows up in Guardians of the Galaxy. And why is he there? He's there because he needs a team to help him. He can't do it all on his own. So while he's a member of it, I swear in the comics, in his head, he is the leader of the Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, he's the guy who tells Quill, like, yeah, we really need to close this rift and get it working. So while I do the magnificent work of closing the rift and healing reality, you fall upon the bad guys with your pointed sticks. You know, he's that kind of arrogance to him. But with that arrogance, he has a secret that he's afraid of. He has seen his own future where if he goes too far over the edge in using his power, it corrupts him. And he turns into an evil version of himself, the Magus, who is Adam Warlock with purple skin. Same power, same everything, but he's evil and insane and crazy. And the Magus eventually takes over. What do you call they're called the Universal Church.
He was kind of split up. Like, his good side ended up being Adam Warlock at like one point, and then the bad side. But what I want to find out though from you is, but how did you feel about the character in the movie?
Well,
did they do him justice?
In the movie, I think they had to tone him back because if they put him in the film like he was in the comic, that would open the door to a whole different direction for the movie. And then comics fans would be screaming like, they didn't do him justice. Why, you know, they could have gone with, you know, his whole storyline. And like you've heard me explaining, his comic history is very convoluted. And in a lot of times, his powers are determined by what is needed in the movie. In this case, in the movie, he was used as almost as a weapon that the queen could point in the direction of the Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, that he's able to take a hit. He could go toe to toe with Drax, you know, so his powers were determined by what was needed in the movie as a weapon for her to go after the Guardians. And they kind of did that. Once again, he's defined by what the story needs. By making him childish, he should have had a lot of those characteristics, but not as childish. He should have been, you know, sort of like, okay, well, you're the only person I've ever known in my life. Your Highness, not Mom.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take my lead from you. But eventually, the needed to have that turning point where he goes, you know what, this isn't right, this you know, this is wrong, you know. And he should have turned against her and eventually joined the Guardians, but they did kind of make him a little bit more childlike. But then again, if they had made him like he was, he would have needed a whole nother arc in a movie that was already stuffed with probably too much, which it did have some things that we'll talk about what we think could have been cut. But the movie was already overstuffed, so they really couldn't do a lot with him. But he was there because they teased him in the second movie.
Well, no, I agree with you, Jack, though. I mean, the way that you kind of say that he should have looked at her as like your highness instead of his mother. I mean, the way that you said it would have been perfect is that she's given him orders to do, and then eventually he decides to rebel against her and say, no, this is wrong. I'm not going to do this. But instead, it did seem like he was a child and that he relied on her a lot. You know, he relied on her acceptance, on her approval. And it just felt kind of weak. And in Infinity War, I guess Doctor Strange really took over the role of Adam Warlock, would you say, in a way?
Yeah. I mean, really, that was, like I said, if I was going to say there's anybody in MCU that is Adam Warlock-ish, it is Doctor Strange when he's not being as touchy-feely. For example, if Spider-Man went to Warlock and said, look, I need you to do this, Warlock would be like, no. Even if there's a small chance you're going to open a dimensional rift and screw things up, we're not doing it. You're going to have to deal with it. You know, maybe, well, everybody hates me. And Adam Warlock is like, well, you have to deal with that. That's your problem. Yeah, I'm not going to risk reality. He would almost be like the Joe Hogarty of the MCU.
That's true. He probably would be.
Cliff, hello. Over the side, Jack.
So I wanted to talk about the darkness of the movie. Do you guys think that it was, for me, I thought it was really dark. And it just the whole thing with Rocket and then his backstory and seeing those creatures, especially his friends, Lila Tiefs and Floor, they creeped me out. They creeped me out more than the face removal of, you know, what's his name?
High Evolutionary.
Yeah, I couldn't think of his name. But that rabbit scared the hell out of me, you know, with that thing over its mouth. It reminded me of
Toy Story.
A little bit of Toy Story, but to right. me, like the human centipede, like where they would do experiments on creatures or people in the human centipede. But it just creeped me out. And I'm sure it creeped out kids too. No matter how cute and cuddly they were, they just were really disturbing.
I don't think they were ever meant to be cute and cuddly.
Well, that's the whole thing though. I mean, would you take your kid to go see that? Do you think your kid is going to be upset? Well, not your kid because he's old enough now. But, you know, Marvel kind of pushes, oh, all these movies are family movies. I guess Doctor Strange was a little rough, you know.
But it's PG-13.
Yeah.
So there, the rating is right there to tell parents, you know, like, you're kind of strongly cautioned. Don't be bringing your 6-year-old to see this.
I don't think he's practicing the DC universe.
What's that?
I just think he's practicing for the DC universe getting dark.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, if this gives me full rein, I mean, I might sound really crazy in just a short amount of time, but
go ahead.
The main things that I would say that still sound very occult, that not necessarily was actually in the film, there was only one thing, Joe, and it was High Evolutionary's ship, which was in the form of a pyramid. So because it was in the form of a pyramid and it could fly, it actually reminded me of a very underrated sci-fi film, which was Stargate, which shows the same thing of a alien, you know, pretty much using human life as stock to gather, you know, resources to really dominate. In this case, it's just a crazy scientist. Now, yeah, I like the crazy scientist, you know, wanting to create this perfect world. I've seen it in many sci-fi films. I just, you know, as we rate it and as I'm thinking about who's watching it, like, I still feel like this is so adult because, I mean, it's talking about genetic mutation and experiments. It's talking about a new world order. It talked about creating the counter-Earth and how, you know, I mean, they literally say in the film, we don't want them to be violent. So we need to figure out to alter the gene for them to be complacent and happy and good. And I'm just like, really? Like, what is this program right now that you're trying to tell me? Like, violence is really bad? And where does violence come from? Who is usually violent? Men. Oh, and why are men aggressive? It's actually a hormone in the gene for what? Survival. You know, like, my brain's going there. As you know, I overthink on everything. So that's where it got me really upset, because I'm like, well, then they have the children in the cages again. It's like, it was already in Love and Thunder. Now they got children in cages again. I didn't like that. And I didn't like cute and cuddly mutated animals in cages either. So there were a few like scenes where I did cry, and I cried because they were really manipulating your emotions. And I don't like that. I like it when it's a good feel moment or it's a really sad moment, but it was like really bringing in some hard topics that I again agree with you, Joe, does not need to be here. You know, it's a superhero movie, you know, it's just win the day, you know, and I just feel like these topics were really dark. Like, even when they got into about Drax's behavior, Mantis's behavior, even Nebula a little bit, and Gamora, it was just like, I'm getting tired of it. Like, it's getting old, because I really did not expect or want it in Guardians of the Galaxy, especially in the first two. It wasn't really there. It's really tempting me to go back and watch the other two to see if any of this is actually in there. Or were they like kind of grooming you in it? Like, oh, we're just going to add a little bit and then a little bit. And then now we're going to throw it all in this last one, you know?
Yeah, I watched the first two. Before I'd seen this, and I loved the first two. I love the first one. I think the first one's almost perfect. The second one is great, but it's not as good as the first one. But I felt like we were missing a lot of the fun from the first two movies, because it was so serious. And yeah, that's another thing I didn't like, was that alternate Earth with those hybrid human animal creatures. I thought they were extremely creepy. They did a good job. I mean, I'm sure it reminded me of Face Off, like where they'd have like all of these people compete to come up with like some of the weirdest looking creatures. And they probably used some of those people to apply the makeup on there, but I just didn't like that. I just think it was, we didn't need this whole movie to be about Rocket, like his story, his backstory. They could have done that like on a Disney Plus thing if they wanted to do it, or in a cartoon or something like that. I think we could have gotten a better story than the one that they gave us. And it, like I said, it is too dark. It's just if you watch the first two movies, and I know Ego was pretty nasty towards the end, but it still was a fun movie, you know?
I think they, with the subject of the high evolutionary, I think they had to go dark. Plus, it's been hinted at numerous in the first two movies, you know, that Rocket went through some pretty intensive, serious stuff. And now we've seen it that, like, you know, holy smoke, you know, Rocket being as abrasive and untrusting and kind of horrible. The reason he's like that is because what he was put through. And you had to introduce characters like the Otter, Walrus, and Rabbit to sort of show, you know, like, while a high evolutionary is doing these experiments, they're the collateral damage of what he's creating as he's doing these things. And that is what cements him as a villain. It's sort of like, yeah, okay, you might have noble ideas, but look at the horrible things you're doing to get there. And That's why the darkness didn't bother me in this with him. So I think it really does cap the character of Rocket. And I don't think we'd ever see it on a Disney Plus. This is too dark for what we've seen on Disney Plus's.
Oh, what about that werewolf by night? That was pretty dark.
Yeah, but that was filmed like an old style monster movie. And it wasn't that dark when, you know, the Man Thing and Jack Russell are actually buddies. And, you know, gee, I told you not to get stuck in places like that. You know, I think it needed to be dark. And I don't think it went too far, because even though it went dark, we literally saw it go into the light where Rocket's ready to die. And he goes up and hears, you know, the white room, and his friends are coming to see him, you know, and greet him, which, let's face it, you know, when we all leave this world, that would be a nice place to end up.
Yeah. Wouldn't you just stay there? I mean, why would you go back?
Well, you know, I don't think it wasn't up to him to go back, because I think he was happy to stay. It was the Otter who's like, okay, but it's not time for you yet. And he's like, what do you mean? And all of a sudden, you know, I get the defibrillator shock, you know. And he's like, wait, I want to stay. Another shock, you know, and he starts to descend away from them. Which really, Fedra would know more about this kind of stuff. But isn't that usually what kind of happens in near-death experiences? That, like, you might get up there and they're like, it's great to see you, but it's not your time yet, you know. And I don't think it's left to people when that happens to get the choice whether to stay or not. Most times it's sort of like, yeah, you're not done. Bye. See you later. And they're like, but wait, it's so nice up here. Nope. Sorry, you got to go back. You got to go back. And I would think waking up after one of those, the first thought should be like, oh, damn, I'm back.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, I like the mirroring of that, though. Like, one friend was telling him, you have to go back, and then Quill is right there waiting for him, literally.
Right, which is, you know, if you're going to come back, it would be nice that, you know, your loved ones are there, like, oh, geez, we're so glad to have you back. You know, but, I mean, when you're staring at the pearly gates and, you know, they're open and you get the, you know, no dogs allowed, you know, like, it's kind of tough. But like I said, that was a very heartfelt moment. And I think the reason it was so heartfelt is because you had the darkness before it. So I really do think you needed the darkness in this movie to show Rocket's relief at returning and him coming back into the fold, as well as cementing the high evolutionary as really, really just a villain. And unlike nearly everything Disney puts out, let's face it, we were introduced him as a villain, we saw him as a villain, and he died as a villain. There's none of this redemption stuff that, like, all of a sudden the high evolutionary is like, I'm about to die, but maybe you were right. I should have been kinder and nicer. Yeah. You know, forgive me, Rocket. I forgive you. Thank you. You know, no, we didn't see that nonsense, which there's probably
there was somebody
screaming at James Gunn saying, he can't die a villain. He, even if his face is gone, he still has to turn nice. We have to be sympathetic to him. No, this guy was evil from the start. And he ended as one. There's hope in phase five, I guess, maybe.
Yeah, I think
Tang was a rotten guy at the end. The high evolutionaries at the end. Maybe they've gotten over this redemptive arc. We saw it in Star Wars. They want to capture, you know, the Darth Vader moment again. But you know what? None of these villains are Darth Vader. Give up. Just leave them as a villain. Leave him as someone we love to hate.
Before we get, you know, like, no, you're right. Everything you said was really good. And I just wanted to comment on that. I liked what you said about how we needed to see the darkness before we could see the light of the movie, which makes me want to see the movie even more a second time. And I think I probably will enjoy it from that aspect. And, you know, maybe that's not what I was thinking since it was the first time, but.
Well, you know, I'm all about cinematic nuance and everything.
Yeah. When you're not an idiot. But no, you're right about the higher evolutionary. That was something I was going to say too. We finally have a villain that's happy to be a villain and doesn't need to be redeemed. Yeah. What did you think about that, Jason?
Well, I liked it. I'm glad they're not trying to find another Loki with a villain again. Like, I'm glad they're just letting villains be villains, basically. I had just lost it. I'm going to be totally honest with you. So give me a little bit and I might find my thought again.
Oh, say that again? Oh, you had a thought? All right, well, you'll come back to us?
And I'll try to find it.
Okay, so Dan, did you like this villain?
Yeah, it was the way, like Jack said, he started, he continued, and he ended as a villain. Like, that scene at the end when Rocket stood off and then the Guardians were ganging up on him, you wanted to see him get defeated, killed. You wanted to see the end of him. And that's the sign of a good villain, is that you want to see them get their comeuppance, whereas so many times we've seen villains that play this kind of tweener kind of character, and you kind of, well, fair enough if they get beat or if they get redeemed. Like, you've not swung too far one way to then go back the other. And I think, like you said, with Kang and now with the High Evolutionary, they've done a good job of embracing villains as villains. Because if you think of, like, all the classic villains that you see across films, a great villain can help make an okay hero at times, if the actor or the character isn't strong as a hero, but the villain is really, really good, then that will then help you support the hero in defeating the villain. And I think the High Evolutionary, they did that with him. I think you just wanted to see him, and he doubled down as well at the end, because all his advisors and everybody, they all turned on him at the end because they just saw him going too far. So he kept going, and that was the good bit about him. He was relentless in pursuing what he believed was right. And that made a really dislikable guy and the perfect villain.
And even the parts where he really showed the extents he'd go to, when he's like, okay, let's just destroy Counter-Earth and I'll start over.
Yeah.
Now, here's a whole planet of creatures you created and made them sentient enough to, like, live as, you know, humans. They're sentient. They're not just animals. You've evolved them, and now you're just willing to, you know, oh, well, let's just start over. You know, that shows how heartless this guy could be.
Yeah, and he was very relentless because he wanted, you know, Rocket's brain. He was just not ever satisfied until he could come up with this perfection. I really loved that interaction between him and Rocket at the end, of really showing him what his goal was. You know, it really wasn't about being perfect. And I was very satisfied with showing him as a villain. Like, one of my favorite parts, I guess, in that is when, and you could see his arrogance, like, he's trying to figure out, how did Rocket know about the machine and how to make the changes on the machine? But then he's like, you couldn't figure out that you weren't going to go to Counter-Earth, and that, you know, in the morning your friends are going to be incinerated. Like, that part showed me, like, whoa, like, now we're going to really see how dark he is. And now it makes sense why Rocket, you know, I think in the first one or the second one, he was always running away. He was always trying to be further away from something. And now it made sense.
Mm-hmm. But you know what? This touches back on a point that came up to me. Once it's revealed that, you know, he wants Rocket to figure out what the creativity is.
Mm-hmm.
He's created that whole flock of kids. without creativity or imagination. They can build a whatever it is he mentioned. I don't know if that has any significance in comics or anything, but he mentioned it several times that they're able to do these technical things, but they don't have the imagination to create. So I'm kind of curious, like, Guardian 4, are they all going to be wearing, you know, maintenance suits on nowhere? That, you know, Nebula's going to be like, yeah, go fix the life support system or go work on the power generators. You know, that they'll be able to go and work.
Well, I think that's, I mean, that's where at the end, to me, not just that it's just happy-go-lucky, but it's that's why it made sense that at the end they were having them dance and be social. Because that, whether they were implying it or not, my perception of that is in order to have creativity, you must be social. And we are social beings. And to me, it was the fact that Rocket had friends, that he was able to, you know, use those neurons to be creative and imagine and think beyond. And that's what this scientist could not see.
With his crate mates.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. That's good.
They even hinted on that narrative that, again, I just don't like that it's repetitive, but it was unique when they're all laying down and they're trying to come up with their identity. That was huge. And that was a beautiful way to show it. Do I like it because it's not everywhere? No, but I liked the way it's like, okay, I am not a number. I am not a slave. I am not an animal. This is my identity. And I'm going to make it my identity for me so that when I go into the new world, that's how I'm going to present myself. That was beautifully and tastefully done, in my opinion. And that's what makes such a profound part at the end for Rocket. At least that's what it shows the origins. Like, he looks at the tag and he's like, I am a raccoon. You know?
Yeah.
And then, and then he sees the baby raccoons and he's like, that's my ancestry. That's my lineage. That's what my people are. You know, it was very uniquely done on an animal way, but we got it.
Well, I tell you, both you and Jack are pushing this to an 8 for me now. You know, it's making me want to go and see this and see it through your eyes, you know, because I think you're
even
right.
If you hated it, go back to see it again just to determine how much you hated it.
That's true.
Now, you know what? And if we can turn to talk about the women, I really actually like what they did with Nebula.
Well, I did.
Okay,
we'll go get to that. I just wanted to say I agree with you guys. I thought the guy's name is Chuck Wadi Iwaji. He was a great villain. And I'm glad, like you all said, he was a villain. They kept him a villain. He had a god complex. He was happy to be who he was. And he didn't want to be redeemed. But you go, Fedra. What did you say about the women?
So if we take apart, you know, Gamora and Nebula in this, what I do like is that they, you know, in a way, of course, you want Gamora and Quill to get back together. You want her to remember. I get it. But I also like that they're keeping her intact in this reality because she's not the same person, you know? So I do like that she was like owning herself, and we saw a few moments where she was actually getting sympathetic. We also saw the fact that she isn't social. So even in those instances, she didn't know what to do. When they were all huddled together, she's just like trailing off by herself. Cause she's just like, I don't get these guys. Like, I don't get this kind of camaraderie. But when she went back to the Rangers, then she was with her people. But with Nebula, I love her complexity, you know. I love how she still has that like cut and dry, always angry at everyone. But I love Mantis's growth and like saying, like, this is what it really is. Like, you can't play that game with me as an empath. Like, I know what you're feeling because that is my power. I know what you're feeling. So I'm going to articulate that. And I think that when Nebula had that observation, you see the change in her throughout it. Like, honestly, if I was anyone in the Guardians in this movie, it solidified that I'm totally Mantis, which I really still like. I was surprised by that because I was just
that's
like
not a shock to me.
My alter ego is like, yeah, I'm Gamora. I'm like this badass with this big knife. But it's like, no, I'm Mantis. I would totally go up to a ferocious fanged octopus and be like, it's going to be okay. Come here. Let me ride you.
I didn't like that though. I did not like that part.
During that scene, I'm like, oh God, don't go for the cheap laugh that she's doing this and they chomp her. I was there and I'm literally like, honestly,
I thought that was going to happen too.
Because in every other MCU movie, during phase four, they would have gone and thrown that away for the cheap joke.
Yeah, I was thinking like, would he eat her and then like spit her out because she doesn't taste good or something, you know? It's covered in slime.
I felt that ruined the creature because it was, you know, a nasty creature in the beginning of volume two. And now all of a sudden they're like, oh, they're misunderstood. That's where they were villains and they went that old path, like where it's like, it's not really bad. It's got a thorn in its paw or something like that, you know? I didn't like that. And then that they were riding on their backs, just was nauseating to see.
I thought that was cool.
I like that part.
I like when they're like, oh, is that cool? It was like, yeah, that was cool. Like, how could you deny that? I did not like when Mantis and Nebula gang up on Drax. I did not like that. I've seen that before in my life personally, so I don't condone that, but I can see how women would do that. I don't think that was well done, but I do like how it changed over time in the film. So in the first two films, yeah, I saw Drax as kind of like this jock. He's not really lighting up there in the brain, but he's really strong and he really knows how to lead, right? But I don't like how they kind of twisted it in this film like, oh, he's great to be a father. Like that's pure super crap. Cool. Hold on. Like I think it's a big job to be a father. So I'm gonna definitely, you know, say that. And I think that maybe that's what he needed to heal. And we saw that in the first two films that, you know, he was grieving and he was angry because of the fact that he lost his own family. And now he's pretty much created his own family. I just wish that maybe they would have done that differently, because I don't think if you're part of a team, do you just directly be like, hey, you're stupid. Like,
I don't know, but
yeah, but I like that. I like that bit because, like I said, Mantis, I thought, had great growth in this because, like you said, she's an empath. And I like that she finally started calling out Nebula for giving everybody grief all the time. Because honestly, would you ever want a person like that in your life all the time? You know, let's face it, be relatives we get stuck with, you know, for better or for worse. You know, that, yeah, okay, put up with them. But none of those people had to put up with her stuff. So that Mantis started calling her out on it. And you know what? Yes, Mantis was like, you know, yeah, he may be dumb, but he's funny. He cares. He'll do his best to protect us and everything. Like, even though she, like, calls him dumb, you know, she did point out everything that he's done to contribute to the group, which honestly is a heck of a lot than what Nebula ever brought to it. So I like the fact that, you know, Mantis kind of takes care of Drax, but you know, here's a guy that can rip open blast doors and knock down walls, you know, but she takes care of him. She's protective of him. Like I said, that's great character growth for Mantis, that we would actually see her go to the point where she's going to, you know, fight for him, not just kind of meekly say, you know, this is something, you know, everybody has their strengths. She's like, no, listen, you know, he brings a lot to this group and he's great. And
No, it was a nice speech.
Actually, I like what they did with Drax, that, you know, if anybody could connect with these kids, it would be the guy who was a dad and had kids of his own. Yes, he's big, he's scary, but the kids weren't scared of him. You know, but then again, with what they've been through with the high evolutionary, who knows? But, you know,
he was lighthearted. He was goofy, you know,
and could relate to the kids and make the kids feel better. Why? Because he'd been a dad before. Peter Quill would have no idea what he's talking about, you know, trying to relate to that.
I want to step in. I had problems with everything that you guys had said, by the way. Some of the things, but some of the things make sense. I will admit, I did not like what they did to Drax because I feel like they emasculated him in a way, you know, that. And I know, Frederick, you said it takes a lot of strength to be a dad and all that, but it's still, he became too soft for me. I felt Nebula became too soft. I felt she should have stayed the way she was. I had no problem with her being that way. There's always somebody like that, you know. It doesn't mean that, you know, you have to be around them 24 hours a day and that they have to talk 24 hours a day, but they're good to have in a fight. And then Mantis, I don't get it at all. Since the Hollywood special or the holiday special, she's been, you know, a bee. You know, she's just been yelling at people, screaming at people, getting very nasty. And I don't like that aspect of her.
I don't think so.
No, she yells a lot in this movie. She yelled in the holiday special a lot too. And I liked her when she was more gentle and was kind of like the voice of reason for the whole crew. And you know, it just seems like she's going through the changes a lot in these last two things for me anyway. And I didn't like that she went off on her own, and I don't like that she's Peter Quill's brother and that they mentioned that in this movie again, not brother or her sister, you know. That's just ridiculous. I don't know. I wasn't a fan of the ending myself, but if you guys seem to like it, that's your opinion.
Too much happiness for you.
Yeah.
In a way. Okay, guys, I have to jump off quick because my iPad is almost out of charge, but my PC is ready. So I'm going to switch platforms here. So I will be right back.
Okay.
Cool beans.
Talk amongst yourselves.
Well, we probably won't have much more to go, but...
Well, Jason, Dan, did you have any thoughts about it?
Dan, what's your offer?
I like Nebula's arc in this film. I felt that she stepped in and she led the team because Quill was very broken at the start. He was struggling with the drinking. He was trying to, you know, gather himself because he was still obsessing over Gamora.
Okay, am I back in okay?
Yep.
All right.
And then all the stuff with Rocket, because Quill was so tied emotionally to Rocket, I don't think he could focus. So they needed Nebula to be almost, because she is emotionally detached for the most part as a character, to step in and lead the team. But I think then her stepping into that leadership role, she then learned more about the team and how she felt about each member of the team. And I liked how that ended with her at the end. I get what you're saying, Joe, about the ending with them all leaving. That just felt a little bit... It just felt really strange that they just almost... They'd gone through this big thing. They were sort of back together. And then they've all decided... Yeah, okay, right, we'll all just go our separate ways. You'd almost feel like you'd want to stay for a bit, and then maybe over time they start to, you know, Quill wonders what's on Earth, or Mantis wonders what else she can do. But it felt like after such a big near tragedy with Rocket and everything that happened, that they then just all of a sudden decided to go their separate ways. I think Drax with the children and getting to be that dad figure again, I think that was a nice way to wrap him up, because it reflected from him losing his wife and his daughter in the first movie, so that kind of finished his story. But overall, no, I did like the arcs that the characters went through. It did just feel a bit strange at the end when they just all decided to just happily part ways, because, you know, it left, when you saw the team that was left at the end, it looked, I think I wrote it down, I said, it looked like you had a role player and then the rest of they had emptied out the bench and that was who we had left, instead of having the main bulk and maybe one or two left. Like, I think it would have been fine if Quill just left and then that's how they kept it for a while, but I'm interested to see the rest of that team in another version, because
good point.
I don't think the dynamics will be the same.
You know what I wanted to mention? You mentioned that Quill was broken, and he was. But I was just thinking, in Love and Thunder, he really wasn't, you know? And he spent a lot of time with Thor, so I felt that that was kind of a weird change for his character, you know, for him to be... Like, he had forgotten about Gamora and moved on. Then all of a sudden, he didn't forget about her. He became a drunk and, you know, the team was worried about him. I didn't necessarily like that whole aspect about him. I guess along the way, he had gotten over it. But still, it's not a perfect movie. But
it would have made more sense if he went off the deep end a bit. Say he got his confidence back like he had in Love and Thunder. And then once he then met Gamora again, that's when he fell apart.
Yeah.
That would have made more sense.
Yeah. What about you, Jason?
I mean, I loved it. I thought Drax's character development ending was perfect to like kind of bring back from the first one where he wasn't really a destroyer. He was a dad who lost his kid. That's why he went after Thanos. And now he can kind of be a dad again, and he's Drax the dad. I loved it. I liked Nebula softening up a little bit. It's kind of like her and Gamora switched places in this one. Like, Gamora is who Nebula was. Nebula is who Gamora was. And Nebula found the family that Gamora had at the first two movies. That old school Gamora now is kind of the daughter of Thanos, like she was at the very beginning of the first movie. So I really like that. And with Mantis kind of yelling at everybody, I think she only yells at the people she can, if that makes sense. Like, she yells at Drax and Nebula because they're tough characters who can take it, and you have to yell at them to get your point across. But with Quill, she gave the analogy of being a frog on the lily pads and learning how to swim. She couldn't yell at Quill because he wouldn't have taken that. She had to kind of be a little softer with him. So I don't think she was getting ruder. I think she just kind of knew how to talk to each person to get her point across, so she could get her point across. So I like how Mantis was in this movie and how she acted.
No, that's a good, very good point. Again, it's something that I will think about when I watch it a second time. Thanks, you know, again, all of you for saying those things. I appreciate that. What'd you guys think about Groot?
I don't think he was that big of a factor in this movie.
Only thing I don't like about him...
He was kind of there along, but I don't think he had the sort of character development anybody else did.
I just don't like the look of him. I like the Groot from the first movie. This one seems like a bigger, fatter Groot.
Look like Vin Diesel in a costume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm glad we didn't see teenage Groot. I'm over.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm over, you know, over the big head thick body, you know?
Yeah.
And is whining. And oh yeah, this one, I liked this one a lot. It was just like, go in, get it done, be part of the team, fly the plane. You know, I loved him when he came up and became that angel. I was like, he's an angel tree. Like Christmas, just in the sky. I'm like, this is awesome. I would just want to like just forward just to that scene so I could just watch it again. Cause it was that I thought was so creative. I was like, that's good writing. He's a tree. Do all these different types of things he could do, you know, not just like the same thing over and over.
And I did like how he was able to separate his branches and hide the guns and everything inside.
Yeah,
so that was kind of cool. And then when he comes out and he's got like four or six arms, each holding a gun, I thought that was a very cool scene.
You know, what's interesting. I just read this morning. And again, I think it just goes to show a lot of times where I will be very snobbish about movies. And I'll tell Jack, it's like, well, you know, I'm looking at the true meaning of the movie and what it's trying to say.
Regular listeners are very aware of how insufferable.
I do miss a lot of things, like what you guys had pointed out. You pointed out, all of you have pointed out things that I missed. But I don't know if you guys are aware of this. I read that there was an article saying that when Groot says, you know, I love you guys, you know, at the end.
Mm-hmm. I've heard this.
Yeah, that it's basically James Gunn confirmed that now we've seen them for so long that we can understand him now. You know,
they said I am Groot, but we just understood it.
Yeah. Like we're finally understanding him. So going forward, if we ever see him again, he will be speaking regular English. I don't know.
We are Groot, but going on to that too, Joe, towards the end, Gamora was had a conversation with him. He's saying, I am Groot, and she's responding to a lot more than, yes, I get that's your name. You know, so as she was getting ready to go, she was understanding what he was saying as well.
I don't know. I always was under the impression that the people that could talk to Groot, they just understood his language, you know?
By Thorin.
Yeah. Anyway,
so it's like people, I think what you're trying to say is that you have to develop to learn his language. It's not like just like that, like it's going to take time and that's what they're implying with the viewer now, is that now the whole team understands him.
That everyone understands him, that we understand him now, because he's been so much a part of our lives that we can now understand him.
Gotcha.
But don't try and watch those movies from the beginning, because we won't want understand them.
Or maybe it's as he develops a connection, maybe it goes into empathy again, that as they develop a connection with him, they can understand what he's saying more than I am Groot.
Like a baby's cry.
Yeah.
Like a parent understanding a baby's cry.
Oh yeah, when Patrick was little, I knew very well when he was, what was a pissed off cry versus a, you know, I'm hungry, I'm tired, you know, I want to play. You do develop an ear for not all crying is the same. So maybe it is like that.
I definitely heard Vin Diesel speak when he said that at the end. I could hear Vin Diesel at the end. Like all the other I Am Groots, I couldn't hear Vin Diesel. But that one, I was like, oh, that's Vin Diesel. Like, I knew it was him the whole time, but it never sounded like him. It sounded like Groot. But that when he said that, I was like, oh, it sounded just like Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
So I was really expecting him to be like, and we are family.
What'd you guys think of Kraglin and Cosmo?
They were fine in their roles.
Yeah, I thought they were fine.
Thought it was good humor to kind of help break up some of the movie.
And good chemistry between them, yeah.
And the thing of the bad dog, good dog.
Totally.
They had that in the comic as well, where even though Cosmo was the head of security in Nowhere in the comic, because the dog is telepathic and telekinetic. And but even though as smart as it was, if you called him a bad dog, he really took it personally. So I'm glad they had that running joke going in there. That was a definite callback to the series.
Well, wasn't that one of the dogs that the Russians put up in a space?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
They were doing that. No, I'm just curious, though. I mean, but this was a gender swap, wasn't it, Jack?
This was a gender swap, but if they're going to do a gender swap, let it be with a character like Cosmo that, you know, a dog is a dog is a dog.
Well, maybe they did it too, because it might have been too much like Doug from
Up.
Yeah. So,
I get you. Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing I don't like about Kraglin is I'm glad that they separated him, kind of like what they did with Rose with the Rise of Skywalker. They're like, well, you just hang out here. You know, we'll take care of things. And then he came back at the end. I don't like that he's part of the main team because I think it's more of James Gunn just giving his brother more to do in movies. He just doesn't really fit for me. You know, he's no Yondu.
I'm glad he did get his moment, though.
I guess so.
Actually, he had two moments, if you think about it.
He did.
Yeah, the first time when he brings Nowhere in and blasts the cannon, but, you know, it's a one-shot deal, you know. But I like that he came in to do that, and I like that he finally figured out the arrow and saved the day, kind of. And it was nice to see, you know, Yondu make that little memory appearance in the background.
Yeah, and that was good to see him. I that was a surprise to me. The whole movie was a surprise. I didn't look at any spoilers. And really? I kind of wonder, yeah.
Wow, that's new for you.
Well, the last couple of movies I haven't done because I haven't been interested in them, you know. So I've gone and seen them. But like if it was Endgame, I had to know what happened, or Infinity War. But these other movies are like, I don't care. I'll just wait until they come out. So maybe I would have liked it better if I looked at the spoilers ahead of time.
I don't think so.
Nah, I think I would have.
They're called spoilers for a reason.
Yeah. You know what I thought? Did you guys think this? And I hope it's not, you know, me being racist or anything like that. But I thought that that guy that played the recorder that had the pass key in his head, I thought that was Ned from Far From Home, Spider-Man Far From Home.
No, he was in Superstore.
That's who he was. I couldn't figure out who he was. I'm like, I know this guy.
Who?
Yeah, Mateo in Superstore.
What? Superstore?
Yeah, Joe, those are totally two different people.
I know, but what is that? I don't even know what that
Superstore
is.
It's a sitcom based in a Walmart.
Oh, yeah?
But I'm looking at him, and I kept thinking he was the guy from Saturday Night Live, and I'm like, no, that's not him, you know. That, but I know him from something. But yeah, okay, now I get it.
Yeah.
I guess the last thing I'm going to talk about is the after the credit scenes. We kind of alluded to it. So the new Guardians are Rocket Groot, Kraglin, Adam Warlock, and who's that other one, Jack? I think it's called Starchild.
Starchild?
Just a random one of those.
One of the kids.
I think it's just, she's just random. I don't think she has a name.
I think they were all called Starchild because I looked at the.
Sure, you're not thinking of 2001?
No, well, when you look
at when I hear Starchild, I think the little baby is in space.
But when you look at the cast, they have Starchild number one, number two, number 22, you know. So it's just, I think it's just, they'll probably call her Starchild. Is that something that's in the comics?
Not that I know of, no. I mean, the introduction of that group that the High Evolutionary created, I don't remember them being around or being in the comics before Guardians of the Galaxy. So that's new ground. But then again, we have, you know, Thor's daughter, Love, or she Thunder. I don't know. You know, Thor doesn't have a daughter with cosmic powers, you know. So this is just, hey, let's add a kid at the end for next time.
Yeah, all the kids are called Star Child. That were in those cages and all that. So, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that team would work for me. Cause you got two idiots. You got three idiots when you think about it. You got Groot, Kraglin, and Adam Warlock, you know, and Rocket's.
I don't think Groot or Kraglin are idiots. They're lighter characters, but I don't think they're dumb. Let's face it, Kraglin's able to fly a ship the size of Manhattan through space. He's got to have some smarts.
Well, when I say I just think he's a weak character, I still think he's a weak character even after this movie. And I think he's done too. I don't think he would go back to Marvel now that, you know, James Gunn is at DC. He's definitely going to be in DC movies. So I don't think he's coming back.
I don't know. I think we might see the Guardians as a guest spot, but I don't think we'll see a Guardians 4.
No.
I got the feeling that they really wrapped up everything well enough that, you know, hey, the team is still out there working. So maybe if they do a Nova movie or another cosmic movie, we might see them show up. Actually, I could probably see them showing up in the Eternals if they make a sequel to that.
I could see them showing up probably 10 to 15 years from now. Like if things don't work out at DC and Marvel needs to another hit or something like that, they might reunite them. But I think it's a long time.
I do. I think they'll be guest stars or team ups, but I don't think we'll see another Guardians solo movie.
Well, we'll see a Star-Lord solo movie.
Same thing. I think he's going to pop up in something. Maybe he'll join the Avengers 2 team.
What Avengers 2 team?
You know, the next Avengers movie shows up. That, you know, he kind of knows them, so he shows up to help, kind of thing.
And he's,
you
know,
like Marvel team up used to be. Oh, this action's happening, and Spider-Man just happens to be swinging by the neighborhood, you know, and shows up to help. I think that's what we'll probably see Peter Quill show up somewhere along the line.
Yeah, that's a good point.
He's out for milk, for getting milk for his cereal, you know, and Dr. Doom is trashing in the shop, right?
All right, so let's rank these movies. First, amongst the Guardian movies, and then amongst the Marvel movies. And Jason, the way we do this is we usually have upper tier, middle tier, lower tier. So, you know, you would put them in one of those. We'll have Fedra go first. You know, where would you rank them in Guardians? And then where would you rank them within the MCU?
It's still third for me. I mean, I still feel like the first two are better, in my opinion. As far as though Guardians as the films overall in the MCU, for me, I would probably put them to middle to upper tier for me personally. Because, I mean, remember, for me, lower is Shang-Chi, Eternals, you know, that caliber. And no, it's not as bad as that for me. So,
well, after phase four, lower has gotten a lot bigger. You know?
Yeah. Unfortunately. Yeah.
Let's see, Dan.
It's still the order. The first one is number one, two is two, three is three. But I think I've seen online, like, everybody going, oh, it's the best, one of the best movie trilogies and things like that. It's up there with Lord of the Rings or anything. I don't think you could class the Guardians as an actual working trilogy, because if you were to just show some, because I always said that the first Guardians movie is a perfect entry into the MCU, because you could watch it and as its own, and it works as a movie. You don't need to know any of the other eight films that came before or anything after. I don't think you could go one, two, and then watch three and have any idea what was going on in three, because you need Infinity War, Endgame, the holiday special, not really, but you need those other two movies to know what happened to Gamora, why is she like this, what's happened to the team, what happened to Groot, and I don't think it works as a functioning trilogy by itself.
Mm.
But I'd have it third. And kind of like most of the other movies, it just goes straight into the middle tier. I think, like a lot of the films in the last phase, it just goes straight into the middle. It's not, nothing's cracked that sort of top 10 in a good long while.
Okay. And so you said, where would you put it in the MCU? In the middle? Sorry.
Middle, yeah. Yeah, okay. Middle tier.
Jason?
You're not going to like this answer. I will put it at an upper tier for the Guardians movies. I thought the first one was best. I thought the third one was the second best. And I thought two was the worst of all of them. But that's just my opinion. I didn't like Ego as a villain, and I like High Evolutionary, so that made it higher in my opinion. Marvel movies, I put it upper middle tier. Okay. I don't think it's top 10, but I think out of the middle tiers, it's the better of them.
Jack?
I'm actually going to echo Jason. Same thing. I thought the first Guardians was just incredible. I did like the second one, Volume 2. However, I liked Volume 3 better. But that's not to say Volume 2 was bad because it's ranked third. That was still a very good movie. So just because Volume 2 is last doesn't mean it's a bad movie. It's still a great movie. It's just I like the other two better. As far as where it fits in the MCU, I would put it upper middle tier as well. I liked it a lot, had a lot of good stuff in. I just think it was a little overstuffed. That they tried to do too much, put too much stuff in. And you're right, I think they could have cut about half an hour out of the movie. And maybe Agreed. That half an hour could have gone to Adam Warlock.
Yeah, I think they could have cut a half hour with the MacGuffin and like trying to get the pass key and all that.
Yeah, and that's specifically the part I'm thinking. That whole part with the
Nathan Fillion
biological planet lab thing. I think they could have bypassed that, and I would have rather seen, you know, more Adam Warlock becoming Adam Warlock, where it would be nice if he could have, yes, he may have started off childlike, but he could have had his moment of realization that, you know, he's not on the side of right, and develop that. So we could have gotten a more comic Adam Warlock at the end of the movie, where instead of leaning against the rock, you know, a rock at the end in the last scene, he's, you know, he's standing up.
Or levitating.
Maybe not levitating, yeah, but, you know, he's doing the pose where he's got his staff and he's leaning on his staff or something, like, you know, a Gandalf, the great pose. Mm-hmm. You know, he's there. You know, not to mess with the guy, you know, and take what he says seriously rather than leaning or sitting on a rock. I would have rather them spend that half hour on that versus fighting. I don't even know how to describe those security guys with the sponge armor. I don't even know what you would call it. But yeah, and I mean, like I said, that would have definitely pushed it into the upper tier and a higher than a 7.5. But like I said, still a good movie, but I would put in the upper middle tier of MCU movies.
Yeah, I would go 1, 2, 3 for the Guardians movies. And I think after seeing it a second time, it may change. Not that order, but it may change where I place it within the MCU. I am going to put it in the middle tier because I think it probably deserves it. Again, when you think about, like I said, that the bottom's getting pretty full now, it should belong in the middle. It doesn't belong there. But yeah, I'm curious to see what my opinion's going to be like after I see it a second time. And I want to thank you all for putting a lot of thoughts into my head so that I can go into that movie now and look at it a different way, because I am going to do that. And I think I'm going to enjoy it more. I'm always harsh when I first see a movie, and that's why I need to see it a second or even a third time to enjoy a little more.
And I'm always happy to set you straight.
Yeah. Thanks, Jack. All right, we'll wrap this one up. So, Jack, can you tell everyone where they can find you?
You can always find me at jackm@wdwnt.com. And before signing off, Dan, always a pleasure. Jason, great to meet you. And hope you can come on again sometime.
Yep.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And Fedra?
Oh, you know, Instagram. You could find me on Facebook as well. And you can email me at fedra@wdwnt.com. And of course, it was great, Jason, for you to come on today. And it's always a pleasure, Dan, to see you.
And Dan?
Thank you. You can find me on Instagram or on Facebook. It was great to meet you, Jason. And thanks again for having me on. I love talking about these movies. So can't wait for the next one.
Jason?
You can't find me anywhere. I don't have any social media, so you can.
That's okay. You don't have Walmart.
To. Well, really appreciate it. I hope to be on it again.
Yeah, and I'm going to echo everybody. I wanted to thank you too, Jason, for coming on. And yeah, we'll definitely have you on again. And I want to thank all of you for being on. Like I said, you guys said a really lot of good things and insightful things that really opened my eyes. But I will say you can always email me at joe@wdwnt.com or send me a friend request on Facebook. And mention Nerd Alert if you can. And also I'm on the podcast Rusted Junk that is about the best or the greatest movies in the 80s. So look for me there too. So check out WDW News Today, Disneyland News Today, as well as Universal Parks News Today for all your Disney and Universal news. Finally, if you like our show and enjoy other WDWNT podcasts and would like to become a Patreon supporter, please visit the WDWNT Patreon page at www.patreon.com/WDWNT. So with that, this will be the end of WDWNT Nerd Alert, the Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 Roundtable, Season 9, Episode 17. So until next time, see ya.
Good night, all, and be good to each other.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, everybody.
We didn't tell Jason he needed to come up with a tagline.
I didn't.